Empire Podcast this week, we go green with Robin Hood. No, not that one. Nor that one. Nor that one. No, we're talking about Taron Egerton. Plus the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast at Nonstop. Another glorious victory on HQ Trivia this week. Add more cash to the retirement pot, Jeeves. The day is fast approaching when I'll be sitting on a beach earning 20% of £1.16. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I'm joined by three colleagues of such lethal cunning, two of whom are excited about the new Hamilton song that dropped this week from our good chum, Linny Manny, and one who, frankly, couldn't give a shit. She could have been anywhere else in the world tonight, but her geek queen, Helen O'Hara, I can't see her, she's behind a speaker, chose to be here instead. How are you? You all right?
I'm a coldie, so apologies now for my voice, but, you know, otherwise fine.
Yeah, okay, no, it's good, it sounds husky.
Thank you, yes.
Like a young Kathleen Turner.
That's exactly what I'm going for, you know. Not bad, Mr. Valiant, just drawn that way.
From my perspective, you're like Kathleen Turner, but if she had a speaker for a head.
Yeah. Well, you too, in fairness, Chris.
it's an improvement.
You have the back of a speaker for a face.
Oh, this is what I've always wanted. Who else is here? We've got the young whippersnapper who may not live to see our glory, but he will gladly join the fight. It's Ben Travis.
And
Ben. No, stop it.
What just happened?
No French on the Empire Podcast. We've discussed this. And last but not least, James Dyer is also here, which is nice, I guess.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, you all right?
Yes.
Good. We'll talk about that Hamilton song later on.
I don't understand.
Linny Manny, Lin-Manuel Miranda, dropped a new Hamilton song this
week.
No, in English.
So what was Ben singing?
Another Hamilton song.
I was being young Philip Hamilton, who learns French and plays the piano with his mother.
You're alarmingly close to me. I'm finding this very disconcerting.
We are sharing a microphone.
We're sharing a microphone due to logistical difficulties.
Yes, logistical difficulties. When, you know, all will become clear. But anyway, never mind these logistical difficulties. As I mentioned in my intro, I triumphed in last night's HQ Trivia Star Wars special. So did Johnny Pyle, our deputy editor. Ben crashed out disastrously on a question about what?
What was it?
It was an Attack of the Clones question.
Well,
I'm not as au fait with the prequels.
Who's not a member of the Jedi Council in Attack of the Clones? Plo Koon, Yoda, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. Mm. And obviously the answer is Obi-Wan Kenobi, because Plo Koon is a member of the Jedi Council, Ben.
I didn't go for Plo Koon. I went for Yoda. I was thinking of
Yoda. Yoda?
I was like, is there some kind of technicality?
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Because I thought they were all on it.
See, this whole thing is a sore point for me, because I set a special reminder so that I would not miss this, because I thought this, of all the times, and I have literally never won HQ. I've never won, and this was going to be my moment to triumph, because no one can beat me at this, and I fucking forgot, because I was arguing politics with my mum at the time.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Brilliant. That's good to know. You would have won £1.16.
Yeah,
or maybe 15, it would have gone down if you'd been one extra person in the quiz. But anyway, the quiz was hosted by our favourite HQ host. We do love Shazza Carpenter, obviously. But it's Beric Livingston who has captured our geeky hearts. Long-time listeners will know I occasionally trot out a cheeky Beric impression on the podcast. And last night I was studying him in great detail. And you know what, guys? I think I perfected it. Listen to this.
Hello and welcome to HQ Trivia. Tonight we have a Star Wars quiz for all you Star Wars geekheads. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. My name is Chris Hewitt and I have 59 monitors around me with all my Star Wars knowledge in a row. I shall be looking at buttons, I shall be pressing answers, and I think I'm going to win that £1.16.
That was really good.
What do you think?
That was really good.
Wait,
not bad.
You sounded just like him.
What? Hang on a second.
What's wrong?
You're cheating, Chris. Let's be honest.
Why?
You're cheating.
Well,
you've got Beric here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That reminds me. Yeah, sir, that was Beric Livingstone. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello, Chris. I'm marvellous. How are you?
Should we speak at the same time so people don't know? You know, people know that it's
they've
not.
They've never seen us together.
They've never seen us together in the same room. Clark Kent, Superman type thing going on here. Welcome to the
Thank you very much. I've been listening to your show with equal excitement.
This is huge, but have you ever won £1.16?
I've never won £1.16, no. But I feel enriched in different ways from your ones.
We should do that. We should start giving away money.
Oh, yeah.
Just randomly.
That would last.
A new game called What's in James's Pocket. Because James,
in fairness, £1.16 is usually the answer.
Nothing but knives and lint.
He's not wrong.
What do you have in your pocket? I have...
I'm sorry, Chris, that's a savage question I can't possibly answer.
Un question sauvage.
All I've got here is the one ring in mine. So.
Really? Yeah. I have a Pret receipt for a hot wrap and a can of Coke Zero.
Yeah, I've got all the receipts from the Sainsbury's that I pass on the way home and go, I've already eaten, I don't need anything. But I'll just pop in for a sandwich, a box of chocolates and a glass of champagne.
Well, Beric, thank you for joining us. We're huge fans of HQ. It has eaten up our time in the office over the last few months. I've notched up a pretty decent HQ retirement fund over the last few weeks.
Extraordinary, yeah. Because I heard some speculation that I was a bot once, but you've won so many times, I'm just wondering if you could be a bot. I mean, you look pretty realistic, but there's a lot of technology out there.
Yeah. My skin is so much better than the early
models.
How do
you do
so
well, apart from, oh, it's your job to know about movies?
I have won the normal HQ, though, a couple of times, yeah, which is just luck, just hammering
it's
the right
It's not luck,
button.
You cheat. You have extra lives.
That's not cheating, that's part of the game. It's and you're allowed one cheating. Extra life per game.
I need to air grievances.
Air away.
Okay,
oh God.
So, in one quiz,
right,
it was specifically stated which had the higher production budget, Avatar or Tangled. Oh, and you went with Tangled. I query that.
Really?
As a matter of fact.
Really?
Even though Wikipedia states it wrongly.
I mean, did you include the catering?
Well.
And the blue paint?
I ate a fair amount of the catering on the set of Avatars. That might have accounted for a lot of it. But so that's one grievance. Okay, that's fine. So you owe me money for that. That's in the bank. And the other one is this. When we have a movie-themed quiz, I am officially banning you from asking questions such as... When Time Out did a list of greatest films. That is a question about Time Out. It is not a question about movies.
Good Lord.
Look, I have a lot of anger.
I
have a lot
of
rage. This money should have been mine. I was robbed.
But James, maybe if you put things, I don't know, in perspective, then you might find that effective
it's just a game,
in dealing
James.
With
I don't
rage.
Know what you mean.
It's just a game. I mean, part of the art, if you like, or the craft of it, is to try and make games that vary between... enough people can win that they're enjoying it and but they're hard enough that they're genuinely...
The themed ones are genius. The Harry Potter one, I mean, again, I've missed it, but still. I'm sure it was great. I'm sure you played it, didn't you, Ben?
I played it. I lost on that one as well.
What was the question?
The Avatar budget again.
It was
we just stuck that in.
It was a curveball.
It was a question about which of the shops is not on Diagon Alley.
Ooh, and what was it?
Oh.
So the one that I did recognise was Gamble and Japes. Gamble and Japes obviously is on Diagon Alley. But the two others, I can't remember what the options were, but I didn't recognise.
Was one of them on Nocturne Alley? Is that the problem?
I think it was
just a made up shop. We did something like Cups and Sorcerers. I think we did all Cups and Sorcerers.
Oh, good.
But to me that was really easy because it didn't sound like a Harry Potter shop to me.
I thought it might be a bit of a fake out.
Sometimes we try and
double bluff
hell out of it,
so
which you know,
that's why
we mess with people's minds as much as possible.
You should do a Game of Thrones themed one, and then you could dress up as Beric Dondarrion, the Lightning Round Lord. Hey?
It's the only other Beric I've ever heard of. That's you get a movie namesake or a TV namesake.
James, how do you think I would do with the Game of Thrones quiz?
I think you. Do you know what the thing about you that annoys me the absolute most is? Given that you've watched at most two episodes of that show, and you would almost certainly get all of them right. It would. Oh, you're maddening.
So how long? Because we won't be listening for 3 or 4 months. How long have you been with HQ? What's
about
how did it start for you?
Months. Okay. I mean, they started, as you know, in the US, and then they wanted to branch out into the UK. They were looking for UK presenters. There was a casting, and it just kind of fitted. So I've been doing it since I think about April.
Okay, and what is life like outside HQ? Where would people find you?
What is life outside?
There is nothing outside HQ.
I started as an actor and kind of branched into music, and latterly have been doing a lot of music production, post-production, composing. So often that's something I can slot in around HQ, and it can be done remotely or whatever. So it just about works. But HQ is there's a lot to it, and there's a lot to kind of keep up with. So it's taking up a lot of my thought right now, and it's a really fun kind of ride, but it's a full on one.
We might do our own version around the back of Morrison's.
do it
by the pins around the back of Morrison's.
Is that where you're going to whack me? Around the back of Morrison's? Can't it be Morrison's Barks?
The kind of savage question you get there, you'd never have survived it.
No, that's true. Win whatever we find in Beric's pockets. That's that's the name of
this is taking a dark turn.
anyway, should we move on? I actually have a listener question. Should we do that, Beric?
Sure.
You want to hang around and answer this?
Surely.
Ben, you have the question because I forgot to write it down.
So this is from Veronica Martzel. So following up on Helen's comment that older actors should leave the door open for younger actors, what are your favourite examples of younger actors playing the same role as an older actor? So she says, my vote goes to Ewan McGregor playing a young Albert Finney in Big Fish. And of course, honourable mention to Donald Glover as a young Lando in Solo this summer.
I'd like to second that Ewan McGregor thing, actually. I think he's a really good call. And if you see, so Warner Brothers has a screening room, and they used to have pictures up on the wall of some celebrities, and they had a picture of a young Ewan McGregor, and he actually does look exactly like a young Albert Finney.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that, I honestly think that was where somebody got the idea to...
I mean, Bob De Niro looks exactly like Marlon Brando, right?
Oh, my God.
That was uncanny.
So yeah, I would second that one. I would also throw in, not so much for a physical resemblance, but just in terms of doing a really good job, the late, great River Phoenix for Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Which I loved.
I'm going to say Henry Thomas and Timothy Hutton, who are the old and young Hugh Cranes from The Haunting of Hill House. Incredibly good casting there.
Do you think
incredibly good? They look so alike, apart from the really shitty blue contact lenses that they put on the younger version.
But aren't they like about 10 years apart in real life?
I think. Are they? I don't know.
They're
right, let's have a look. Timothy Hutton is...
They might be
born 50. In 1960, and Henry Thomas was born in 1971. So, yes, exactly that. Anyway, but no, they look alike. So, yeah, you know, well done. Good casting. Props to the casting director.
That's my thing. That's the one thing that took me out of The Haunting of Hill House.
But you didn't think that looked alike? Or was it the contact lenses?
No, it was the fact that I didn't think Timothy Hutton was older. It was old enough to be the older version.
He looks pretty haggard in it, you know, but he's been through a lot.
I don't think he does look pretty haggard. Oh, I think he looks like a guy who's in his, at best... which is very, you know, this is a compliment to Timothy Hutton, early 50s, I would say. And I didn't really understand why they didn't just put Henry Thomas in prosthetics.
Well,
apart from maybe they would have had a pair more.
Piss on my chips, why don't you?
I seem to remember some really good old young casting in Space Cowboys as well. Do you remember Space Cowboys? It was that not very good film with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, but they were going to space.
James Garner, people like that.
Robert Duvall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The older, younger versions of themselves were really quite convincing. I remember that being really impressive.
I've erased that film from my memory.
Well, okay, then you can't really contribute on that point, can you?
That's true.
I'm going to go incredibly first base and say something very obvious and recent, but one of the best things in Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, is Jude Law's young Dumbledore. I think he's really, really good casting for that. He's not in the film a huge amount, but I think in the time that he is there, he makes a really good impression. You feel the sort of gravity of him, but you can also see the slightly younger wit and energy to him. I think he feels... of a piece, probably more with Michael Gambon's Dumbledore in the later Harry Potter films. But I think he's a really good choice. I'm really intrigued to see more of him in the next three films.
I have a question.
I believe that's what they threatened, yes.
At what point did incredibly dapper Jude Law Dumbledore in his three-piece tweed suit decide that he would jack all that shit in for jewel-encrusted onesie robes and matching hats?
Well, interestingly, someone on Twitter had an answer to this. When he got tenure was the answer.
And he was like, no effort, I'm in my comfort zone, fuck it, robes on.
I love it.
Amazing. I think Beric's nailed pretty much this one. It's Bobby De Niro, isn't it? And Marlon Brando. It's... I mean, that's the gold standard, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, they look nothing like each other, but other than that, absolutely perfect.
Do you not think?
No!
Young De Niro was very dashing, very handsome. Young Brando was very dashing, very handsome.
Yes.
In totally different ways.
Yes.
They both have faces.
They do have both have faces, and voices, and feet.
And at some point, he could afford cotton wool and, you know, popped it in and, you know, like Dumbledore.
Not man come.
Exactly.
What was that?
Look, leave me alone.
What was that was awful.
I was trying to Brando, and let's be honest, failing.
What about, say, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis Looper?
Yes.
No, it's terrible casting, though.
No, because the...
I mean, they're both great actors, but
But the prosthetics make them look...
No, it doesn't.
It does.
No,
it really does. Oh, Helen.
Wearing a bad fake nose is not the same as making them look alike.
I think it does. He has a proper Brucey nose.
You have a proper Brucey nose. I don't know.
What?
Well, that's me in my place.
When Helen has a cold, she feels like a cornered mongoose. She would just lash out arbitrarily.
She's like a honey badger.
What about our favourite subject, Helen? Mm-hmm. Anyone in the MCU? There was a guy who played... young Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
He was very impressive.
Uncanny.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Kurt Russell again later, aren't we?
We are indeed. Yeah, he was pretty good.
He was very good. What was his name? K. Russell something.
I think it was K. Russell.
K. something Russell.
I think it was Kurt Russell. But because the MCU now does this weird de-aging thing, that it doesn't really happen that often. I think it happened in Black Panther, so we see T'Chaka as a young T'Chaka.
I've got a controversial one.
Okay.
Tom Hardy.
Oh, no,
as
no, no. No.
Young clone of Patrick Stewart.
As pr- Praetor Shinzon of the Riemann Empire.
That's the one.
Yeah. I mean, they just gave him a little sticky on Patrick Stewart nose.
Young Captain Kirk. I'm not so sure about that one either.
Well, Chris Pine morphing into William Shatner.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
he would never.
If you can imagine like an after making an album with Spock and doing like poetry and having a band and stuff, maybe it could happen. That
true.
I should have just used Shatner. Would have been better for you, better for us.
Oh, no. I want to hear Chris Pine singing Common People now. It'd be one of the best things ever. I'm going to finish by mentioning one of the big daddies. We started with Ewan McGregor. Let's finish with Ewan McGregor.
Ah, yes.
Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan.
No, I don't like that because I just hate his Alec Guinness voice going on there.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I like.
But Master Yoda said I should be mindful of the future.
Can we not?
Not at the expense of the Loving Force.
It's like Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman doing Alec Guinness voice in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Oh my god, yeah.
He was totally like trying to channel Sir Alec and, you know, like, just he really should leave that.
He just
there.
Shouldn't, yeah. Can we have Alec Guinness himself as you know, the son of other characters in Kind Hearts and Coronets? The son, the younger brother, the younger sister, you name it, he's there.
Yeah.
Playing eight different characters brilliantly.
Okay. I think that the best example of that is clearly Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future 2, where he plays his own daughter.
He does
terribly.
He? So badly.
I love that film, but my God, he's so bad in this.
We'll need to talk about that film in news. There was a very disturbing tweet this morning. Did you see this? Saying that allegedly Back to the Future is the franchise that most of the public want to see remade. To which I say, no! That
Helen,
is all.
Helen will go back and change that before it happens.
I will.
Yeah, with whom? Like, because James Corden will get it or something.
Oh, yes. I'm totally on board.
No, I'm going to have nightmares.
He could play Doc Brown and Marty.
No.
Because he's endlessly versatile, isn't he? And he's a people's sweetheart.
Get all his friends in to be the band.
Oh, gosh.
It'd be DeLorean.
DeLorean karaoke.
Pool karaoke.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. James, I can see you're loving this idea.
Yes. I've been a huge fan of his since I did a set visit for Lesbian Vampire Killers, which we can all agree is a stone cold classic.
But surprisingly doesn't feature in Empire's list of the 100 greatest movies for some reason.
Not yet, but they're redoing the list, though, I think.
Yeah. I've heard they left something out and have to add it in, so must have been that.
If you want to have your question read out on the Empire podcast and treat it with the respect it deserves, you can get in touch with us via a number of methods. We're on Twitter as @EmperorMagazine. Use the hashtag EmperorPodcast, and chances are we won't see it. What else are we on? Facebook? Ben, we should get a Facebook question. I keep asking this.
I keep looking. People send in a Facebook question.
Send in better Facebook questions.
Send me a Facebook question, because I have been trawling through the inbox and there's not really any there. So
yeah,
who uses Facebook? Come on.
It's just people complaining about stuff. Nonsense.
Russians use
Russians. Facebook. What's
hashtag
that about?
Topical.
Yeah.
We have revised the list for you.
Hashtag political.
Here's a question for an Empire podcast.
Which favorite Russian accent?
Wow.
Obviously, Sean Connery's in there.
Yes. Without a doubt.
We shall into history.
Of course, actually. Although somebody told me recently he's Lithuanian, so.
Yeah, I read that.
So actually, it's perfect. It's spot on.
It's a perfect Scottish-Lithuanian accent.
He could have grown up in Lithuania, but spent a summer on exchange in Glasgow or Edinburgh.
Edinburgh,
much more accurate. Anyway, you can also email us as well, podcast@empireonline.com. Right, next up we're going to do movie news, but before that, Beric is going to take his leave of the podcast.
Thank you, podcast.
Just in case.
For having me.
It's been a lot of fun.
It's been wild.
Do you have any questions for us, by the way?
Questions for you.
You should have compiled a quiz for
us. You mean like a little quiz?
Yeah.
I could do you a little quiz.
Okay.
I could do you an HQ Unplugged
quiz. I like that, yeah.
I could read it off a piece of paper.
Oh my God, live and acoustic, here we go.
Okay, I throw you. How many questions do you want? I give you four questions. Three questions.
Let's do three questions.
Three questions.
Three's a magic number.
Okay, going to throw you an easy one. So, what prompted Vin Diesel to offer Dwayne Johnson a part in the Fast and Furious franchise? A fan suggestion? A movie magazine vote? A dream?
It's got to be a dream. It's Vin Diesel.
Yeah, I'm going with a dream just because I want it to be.
I'll go with a fan's suggestion.
Uh huh.
I will also go with a fan suggestion.
Interesting. So we got a 50-50 split here. That's pretty much what we had on the show. But yeah, it was a fan suggestion.
Yes!
A fan suggestion. And it went so well, didn't it? Like, you should always listen to your fans and you'll never fall out with your co-stars.
This is why Chris and I have money in the HQ bank.
Right, yeah. So,
what do I win for that purpose?
You're one step closer to retirement.
Okay,
let's go on to Q2. Which of these stars appeared in a hip-hop video to promote an 80s crime caper? Kevin Costner, mm-hmm. Michael J. Fox, Tom Hanks.
Oh, I know this one.
You do?
I know this one.
Tom Hanks.
Yes.
I mean, what a classic track.
What an amazing track.
Pretty much in my first week at Empire, Nick Desemlian sat me down and made me watch the entirety of the Dragnet
video. I remember
video.
That. Wow.
I mean, I tried to watch the whole of it for my research, but for this question, but I couldn't get all the way through. But, it was pretty special, isn't it? Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd rapping and, like, Dan Aykroyd's brother on the production there with, like, the Fairlight CMI synthesizers and...
It's the sort of thing they just don't do these days. Tom Hanks doesn't do a rap for Bridge of Spies. Or
All that money and no rap. But okay, last question.
Last question.
Who was banned from taking part in the Oscars in the 90s? Billy Bob Thornton, Richard Gere, Robert De Niro?
Well, I happen to know this because this is one of the questions I got right on the way to a recent victory. So I'll
it's so hard to fox you.
So what are the what
I'll recuse myself.
Again?
Billy Bob Thornton, mm-hmm. Richard Gere, Robert De Niro.
I'm going to go Bobby De Niro and say that they looked into the future and saw whatever bad grandpa happening and just decided retroactively that was done.
That was a well thought through but wrong answer.
I'm going to say Billy Bob Thornton.
My guess was going to be Gere, actually, because I have a vague memory of him wearing like an AIDS pin or something and getting told off for that.
Really?
Kind of, yeah. This was a super savage question on the show. We knocked out almost everybody.
And question sauvage. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah, you know. Oh, that's that impressive. I think he said some words about Tibet when he did an order done. And they said, you can't come back here if you're going to get all political. So you probably would have won this again, wouldn't you, Chris?
In fact, I did win, so I have won this game of What's in Perry's Pocket? A lot of fun.
Great.
Which I imagine you just walk around
receipts.
With £5,000 spending money and...
I have to have a prize at the ready, yeah.
Cool.
That was fun and well done on consistently winning the quiz.
Thank you very much indeed, and thank you so much for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure. And,
it was really fun. Movie night every Monday.
Movie night every Monday, indeed. Brilliant.
Oh, and we're reducing our Harry Potter lot. We're doing 100 Harry Potter on Tuesday.
This is my chance.
We're doing a Marvel Universe on Thursday.
Ooh.
It's all about the movies on HQ right now.
Oh,
you
say
you've inspired
universe.
Us.
Is it Marvel as a whole?
Dear.
Is it
Here's
MCU?
Someone that really knows the subject.
Is it any Marvel movie as well as outside the MCU? Do you know what the distinction there is?
I'm going to say
so we can
yes.
All bone up.
Have you fat checked the budgets? Is what I'm saying.
I'm going to do that now.
Now it's james@empiremagazine.com. If you could maybe slip me the answers ahead of time, there's a fiver in it for you.
A lot of people richer than you have asked me that, and they haven't corrupted me yet.
Damn it.
So why spoil the fun? But thanks for having me.
Brilliant. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
So that was Beric. Beric has gone, and now we can get on with the movie news section. It's Thanksgiving this week, so Hollywood kind of shut down. There wasn't really a lot of movie news out there. Not really a lot to get our teeth into, but enough, I would say. Including the reveal of the full title of DC's Birds of Prey.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this on, first of all, people put up the link to Margot Robbie's Instagram, mm-hmm. where she'd sort of written on her script Birds of Prey and the fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's cute. That's a nice doodle. And then people started reporting on it like this was the name of the film. And I was literally like, wait, what? No, don't be ridiculous. That's clearly just a doodle. She's doodling on her script. And isn't that a fun thing to do? No, that's apparently the name of the film. And honestly, I think it's a terrible idea. I like it as a phrase and an interesting, you know, use of words in the English language. But, like, come on, have some faith in your concept. If your concept is Birds of Prey, do Birds of Prey. It's like calling it Avengers featuring Tony Stark, honestly, so we're pretty sure you'll like it. I mean, you don't need to do that. You just need to have the confidence in your concept and trust that will sell. And if she's a big part of it, then by all means put her front and centre in the advertising. You know, why?
I'm personally quite into it, to be honest. I quite like it. I think it, because everyone's just going to call it Birds of Prey anyway.
Having worked in video stores, I know this to be exactly the case. You got that Birds of Prey movie, you know, it won't be, do you have that fantabulous contraption of the thingy-majiggers? It won't be that.
It won't be that. People won't be using that on mass, but I think it feels like a little bit of a statement of intent, especially because one of the things that was quite troubling in Suicide Squad was the Harley-Joker relationship, and the sort of power dynamics there were a bit not great and not in the way... That it should be troubling because Harley and the Joker don't have a lovely relationship, but I think it just sets a bit of a precedent that this is going to be about her claiming her power back in a way, and I think it's just quite a nice, like, it feels very in character for her, the kind of
the over the topness,
yeah, the OTT and the it just feels really in character for Harley Quinn, the over the top nature of the language and stuff. I think it's a fun nod that even though it's official, it's also kind of just there as a bit of a fun thing for.
It is a film about a woman whose special power is she owns a baseball bat. That is literally what this film is about.
It's not, just though, saying. Is it?
That is her power, though, isn't it? She owns a bat.
No.
I own a bat. I'm not a superhero.
Well, what's Batman's power?
He is very rich, and he's, you know, got gadgets. She has no gadgets. She has a slugger.
He owns a batarang.
He does.
He owns a Batmobile.
If I had a batarang, I'd feel certainly more super.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with that. I quite like this title. I think it's flowery and in all the right ways, and I think more films should have stupid titles and memorable titles and titles that stick in your mind. And I don't think any of us are going to be able to shake the fanfabulous blip blip of, what's it called? Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. No one's going to really say that. But also it does show that, you know, she is kind of front and center in this one. I do take your point, though. I do take your point, Speakerhead Helen. There you are.
She shouldn't necessarily, first of all, be front and center. You should trust your female ensemble, first of all. And second of all, like, again, you shouldn't, if it is that theme, Ben, which you suggest, and that's a good theme and everything, but you shouldn't have to put your theme in the movie title for it to be clear to people. That's crazy.
It's not really subtext when it's actually the name of the film.
Yeah.
There is no subtext in the DCEU. But it's exciting still. And this is a film that I am cautiously optimistic about.
Yeah, me too.
It is directed by Kathy Yan. It starts shooting in January. It also stars the likes of Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Rosie Perez and Journey Smollett-Bell and Ewan McGregor, who we've been banging on about in this podcast, as Black Mask. So, I don't know. Hopefully this... The best thing that this movie has going for it is that it's not Suicide Squad 2. And I think we can all agree that it is a very, very good thing. And hopefully the Joker, as played by Jared Leto, will not show up in this and ruin everything. So there we go. That is...
Where to sit on the fence, Chris?
That's one piece of movie news. Another piece of movie news that happened in the week is that Chris Pratt attached himself limpet-like to a new reboot of The Saint.
Yeah, that seems like good casting to me, actually.
You think?
I think so. I think
roguish charm.
Roguish charm, touch for light comedy, you know, handsome. I think that kind of ticks all the boxes that you need to tick.
Do you think Chris Pratt is very much the Ian Ogilvy, or perhaps more accurately, the Roger Moore of the modern era?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Can you think of anybody? I mean, there's probably some people who are more urbane than him, I don't think he's far off.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think that the character Simon Templar is, for me, and I know this didn't happen in the big budget remake with Val Kilmer, with Val Kilmer, which was terrible.
Which I think we all remember well.
But I see him as Roger Moore in Ogilvy. I see him as a Brit, and, you know, I don't know, Chris Pratt did a British accent on an episode of Parks and Rec, which was horrendous, but knowingly so. I don't think he's going to be playing him as a Brit, but I just think, you know, if you're casting someone who's playing a suave British spy / crime fighter at the moment, and you're not casting either one of the Henrys, Golding or Cavill, then what are you doing?
Well, that, I mean, yes, but also we've taken over all their favourite superheroes in the last few years, so I mean, maybe it's time to share and share alike.
We have your Superman, we have your Spider-Man, we have your, we're going down the list now, Professor Xavier.
Wow.
we had their Batman for a while as well. Do you know what I mean?
We've been
around. So.
Who else do we have?
We have your Vision.
Your Vision.
Your Vision. We have your kind of Thor.
Kind of.
Really? He's doing a British accent, isn't he?
Okay.
Yeah, so we're there for
yeah.
Thor's a Brit. Yay!
Yeah. Anyway.
In the same way that Sean Connery is actually Lithuanian.
We sail into history. I just love doing that. Anyway, so we're happy with that. James, you seem very, very happy with this news.
Couldn't be more thrilled.
Thanks, James.
Do you know what I am happy about, though?
Oh, God, here we go.
this is a genuine thing. Mm. The MCU, after so many years, has finally listened to the podcast.
Apparently it's not official.
Has unofficially listened to the podcast. And apparently now unofficially retconned the timeline for Spider-Man Homecoming, which I thought was a glorious reverse.
It did officially retcon the timeline for Spider-Man Homecoming. It did so in Avengers Infinity War, when Tony Stark said 6 years and not eight.
Well, that's true, but now it's been retconned again to 4 years.
No, that's from... That's from the Battle of New York to Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. So
Keep up.
4 years. So the official canonical. So then it is official then. If it's in Infinity War, so it's 4 years to 6 years.
Well, no, but and then Infinity War was contradicted by that appalling title card in Spider-Man Homecoming. Yes. So we didn't. We still didn't have an official. But we still don't.
That's what's been retconned, hasn't it? So essentially, the title card we're saying is just erroneous.
Yeah, we're basically just ignoring that, which is essentially what Chris and I decided to do years ago, anyway. So it works out well.
Because Helen and I will be doing a 4.5 hour podcast on this development immediately after this.
Just to clarify why I'm bringing this up, it's because the new book, Marvel Studios: The First 10 Years, has an official timeline which puts Homecoming at 4 years. After instead of 8 years. So that's at least semi-official.
That is correct.
Yeah.
It should be correct because it takes place at the same time as Civil War, which takes place
They should really go back
4 years after.
And tweak the title card.
Yes, they should, because it was idiotic.
Yes.
And it makes Michael Keaton's daughter, Liz, look like an idiot. Like, she's drawing a brightly coloured doodle of superheroes when she would be, I guess, 13 or 12 or 13. Anyway, can we talk... That's enough of that nonsense. Yep. Superheroes are a little rubbish. I'm over that. It's just a phase. And what I'm really into at the moment is Tom Hooper's Cats. Because here is a movie...
A sentence no one has ever uttered.
Here is a movie that I genuinely cannot believe exists. And I cannot believe it has attracted the cast that it has attracted. And this week it attracted two more people to its cast, which, if you don't know what it is an adaptation of the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical based on the T.S. Eliot poems. And it is the worst musical I have ever had the misfortune to see.
So bad.
So bad. It has the one good song, as we've said in the podcast before. Memory! Blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. That's exactly how it sounds, too. Yeah.
And it's dreadful. But despite that, Tom Hooper's making a musical working title are behind it. Good people are
good
attached.
Good people.
Good people who know what they're doing are attached to this. Big Driss, Ian McKellen. Judi Dench, Taylor Swift, Jennifer Hudson, who plays Grisabella. She gets to sing the one good song. And this week they were joined by Rebel Wilson and Jason Derulo, who I'm reliably informed is a popular beat combo.
He will be the cat who comes in and immediately says, Jason Derulo, which is how all of his songs begin.
That's very funny to people who
know
who he is.
Don't have a reference.
It's literally a reference to his name, James. I mean, there's not a huge amount to understand.
I appreciate the...
It's very
good.
This is why I'm here. This is good for the
millennials. Okay. So Jason Derulo is in the movie. He's going to be playing... So Rebel Wilson's going to be playing a cat called Jenny Any Dots.
Does she have any dots?
I don't know. Jason Derulo will be playing Rum Tum Tugger.
Which I Wikipedia'd because I had to.
Of course
I just,
you did,
I just felt like I needed some kind of element of understanding. And he is the Mick Jagger of the cat's world.
Yeah. The last time I Googled Rum Tum Tugger, it took me to a website that I should not recommend on the Empire podcast. A couple of things I want to say about this movie. I'm desperate to see it because. It's going to be amazing, isn't it?
There's got to be something. Is this like Venom where we kept going, look, all these great people keep signing up for it. There's got to be something. Yeah. There's got to be something there.
Why are these people signing up for this movie?
There must be a thing.
There's got to be a reason. Yes, I think. And obviously Venom has paid off. It's made lots of money around the world.
$780 million and counting.
Can we just take a moment to understand that Venom is making more money than Mission Impossible Fallout? And if there were ever proof that there is no higher power in the universe, that is it.
Terrible film makes money is not a headline, by the way.
No, it's not, but still. Yeah. Venom.
Anyway, so I'm excited about this. And my theory that I've developed about Cats and why it has attracted this cast is that Tom Hooper has told everybody that they get to sing Memory. And he didn't expect them all to sign on. And now he's running around in a flap with a flop sweat trying to work out how they can all sing
good song. A two-hour version of Memory sung by that cast would be better than any version of the musical Cats.
I really want to hear Idris Elba's memory. Like a really gravelly...
Believe
in the void.
Yeah, it'd be amazing, wouldn't
it? With his big coat on.
Be so good.
Hey, speaking of Cats.
Okay, yeah.
Look at this segue. The Lion King trailer is online.
I've not seen it. Is it good?
I mean, it's the Lion King. It's just exactly the same shots, like framed exactly the same way.
It's like the Aladdin one,
but
isn't
now
it?
They've got more kind of visual noise in the detail. Like, I can't call it live action. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to do that. It's not live action, but I don't know what else to call it. It's the new version of the Lion King.
It's photoreal animated Lion King.
Yeah, sure, I guess. I didn't... I mean, fine.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
you can't call it
It's very impressively done. I don't know...
It's
you are just a hater, aren't you?
I'm not a hater. Well, actually, The Lion King is not my favourite Disney of the era. Yeah, that's right. I said it.
What is? Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, or Little Mermaid, probably.
Little Mermaid is...
I love The Lion King.
It's a great film, and they have correctly realised that there is only one James Earl Jones and no one else can James Earl Jones, so he must James Earl Jones, which I'm totally in favour of. Mm-hmm. But, like...
No, see, I love The Lion King, and it's not just because it features Scar, who apparently I sound like, according to iTunes reviews of the Pilot podcast. I enunciate like a Disney villain.
Cutting that bit out.
So thanks for that. But no, Scar's awesome, Jeremy Irons. I really like the music in Lion King as well. There's just something magical about it.
I mean, this is just a first teaser. It's very sort of tingly. Oh, here's all the shots you know in a slightly new way. For me, the most exciting thing about this is the voice cast, and you only really hear James Earl Jones in this.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've got Donald Glover and Beyonce and
not
Billy
the voice
Eichner.
Cast,
and
the cast. They played these characters, didn't they?
Mo-capped. You've got Billy Eichner doing little meerkat moves. And I think somebody, it might have been Robbie Colin on Twitter, pointed out, are we going to get a live-action Timon doing do the hula in...
We can only hope.
Sort of photoreal animation. That will be a sight to see.
Yeah. I mean, how much do you really get from a mocap in this kind of character?
I don't know. I'd love to see the hula mocap.
The facial structure is like so super different. Like, I don't understand.
You're so like animal racist.
I'm very animal racist, apparently. But I just like, if something's been done brilliantly, I don't know that you need to do it again the same way. And having said that, like, I did really enjoy The Jungle Book. I wasn't expecting to, and I really, really liked it. Mm. Although they changed that quite a lot, and I don't know how much they're going to change this one.
But then, I mean, why mess with perfection, Helen?
Well, that's kind of what I'm asking, James.
But the money, Helen.
Think of the money, Helen.
Okay.
This could fund a dozen adaptations of Cats.
That's not a selling point.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I forgot about that. Anyway... Anyway, we look forward to Lion King. It is opening in March of next year. So, exciting times ahead. Finally, we're going to finish off with some very, very sad news, which William Goldman, the legendary screenwriter and novelist, passed away at the age of 87 on Friday afternoon. And his contribution to cinema is, well, pretty much immeasurable. He is the guy... Forget the fact that he wrote all his classic movies for a second. Forget the fact that he won 2 Oscars in his life. Forget the fact that he wrote... we'll list him in a second. Mm. But he wrote a book called Adventures in the Screen Trade. If you have any interest whatsoever in screenwriting, pick up that book. It is invaluable. And, of course, it is best known for his maxim, nobody knows anything, which can be applied to all kinds of situations in Hollywood and outside Hollywood and in this pod booth. I interviewed him once, and he was very, very kind, really, really wise, and very tolerant of a very young reporter's stupid questions. But the movies he wrote, I mean, my God, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Misery, Princess Bride, adapted from his own novel, of course, The Hot Rock.
He won the second
Oscar for All the President's Men as well. It's an incredible list, just a cavalcade of classics.
Yeah, no, he would have had a pass for life for Butch Cassidy alone. The fact that he kept working at that level is kind of astonishing. Mm. I mean, All the President's Men, again, that was a story that kind of almost wasn't finished at the time that, you know, he started work on that screenplay. And he managed to make something that people were sick of, that they'd been watching on the news nonstop for a year, and make it this thrilling drama, which is a kind of an astonishing feat as well.
People typing is exciting.
People typing, it is really exciting. Yeah. It's an amazing... And then, of course, like, I'm going to talk about The Princess Bride, because that is one of my absolute all-time favourites. It's It's brilliant. The book is also brilliant. If you haven't read the book, if you've only seen the film, you have to read it. It's even funnier. It's even funnier. And the sort of the detail and the context that he gives it, in the same way that the grandfather reading to the grandson in the movie gives it some context and some detail, is just glorious. It is one of the all-time greats, and I think it is... Yeah, I just love it.
Indeed. The great William Goldman, who passed away last week at the age of 87. Time now for this week's guest. Taron Egerton is an old favourite of the podcast. He was on our last live show. Was it our last live show? No, it was the one we did in February, our 300th episode, where he came along and didn't know it was in front of an audience. And anyway, he was great. Now he is here to talk about Robin Hood, the live-action reimagining of... the Disney cartoon, I'm guessing. That's what my guess is anyway, in which he plays a titular character. Ben went along to talk to him recently in a London hotel room the day after Taron had finished shooting the Elton John biopic Rocketman.
Yeah, he'd shaved his head and he was wearing a hat. And we talk about that hat for a little bit at the start of the interview. He was really fun.
Wow, exciting stuff to look forward to. Here we are.
Top hat chat.
Top hat chat indeed. Here we are. Ben Travis talking to Taron Egerton. Enjoy.
So, welcome to the Empire Podcast.
It's great to be back on the Empire Podcast. Yeah. Last time I did the Empire Podcast, Chris neglected to tell me there were going to be 300 people sat there.
Yes, it was the live show, wasn't
it?
You just kind of turned up.
I'm glad to be here on this far more low-key version of things.
So we're here to talk about Robin Hood.
We are.
Which is really fun and really pacey and really energetic.
It is those things, yeah.
And it is a very different take on Robin Hood.
Did you enjoy it, Ben?
Yeah, I did. I had loads of fun with it.
Thank you, man.
And it's such a sort of stylized take on that myth, on that story.
Yeah.
How did Otto Bathurst, the director, how did he pitch it to you? Because it must have been a kind of difficult one to get across what he was trying to do.
Well, so I think I was 25, amazingly, as I turned 29 in a couple of days, when they first approached me about it. And they said, my agents got in touch with me and said, look, are you interested in playing Robin Hood? Mm-hmm. And I said no. And I just felt it was far too soon after the last one. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't really know if it was... It conjured a very earnest image in my mind of something that's a bit worthy and a bit thigh-slappy and a bit panto. And I just sort of thought that's not anywhere near what I want my brand to be. And then Otto pitched it to me, and I read the script, and it just felt like something that wasn't like Robin Hood.
Yeah,
it felt like something that was different. It felt I'd seen Otto's work in Peaky Blinders, and something of what he did with that kind of historical piece that historical story that is given a sort of very contemporary rock and roll twist. Mm-hmm. If this was going to be done in that mold, it all of a sudden felt like something quite cool. And so I read it, and there was still work to be done on the script, but I could see the shape of something that was quite interesting, and I felt that I could give it a dimension that hadn't been seen in the character before. I'm a younger iteration of the character. It's an origin story of sorts, and it just all of a sudden felt like a good idea, but it was largely Otto and his description of it feeling very modern. He wanted the bow and arrow to feel like a gun. He wanted a kind of very, you know, like the horse work to feel very kind of utilitarian and fast paced and a means to an end, and something that was very, very choppy and quick and dynamic. And I just thought it sounded really cool.
I mean, even though it's an origin story, to an extent, it also doesn't really waste that much time before getting you to being Robin Hood, a semblance of Robin Hood that you recognize.
Well, yeah, I mean, the movie licks along, you know, it's a quick movie, it's a quick, fast-moving film, and, you know, it's designed to appeal to a superhero audience. That's what it's a kind of medieval superhero movie is the intention. And so you find him out in Syria during the Crusades, you know, fighting in a kind of fool's war, you know, an unjust war, and he gets very, very badly injured and is, through a certain series of events, becomes very disillusioned with the side he's fighting for and comes back to Nottingham a sort of broken man, really. And Jamie Foxx's character John steals aboard the ship with him and sets about opening his eyes really to what's going on around him, because he sees a certain skill set in him and a certain capacity to do something that will change the status quo and shake things up a bit, and he becomes his mentor and trains him in this very specific style of fight and archery. This archery style is a Saracen style that's kind of all about very, very quick close quarters fighting, and it's what gives him the edge over the Nottingham soldiers and allows him to become this kind of this enigmatic idea, this the Hood they call him, and it's what allows him to sort of to mess up the sheriff's plans.
I mean, that sequence early on in Syria, that is a moment where you go, okay, yeah, this is really different.
Yeah.
I'm coining that scene Call of Duty Robin Warfare. Has anyone said that to you yet?
Call of Duty Robin Warfare, that's good. I like that.
I just want to get that out because it is very like you feel the real tension of it, and it's tactical it's militaristic.
And I think it's messy. That's what I like about it. I think, you know, I think Otto always referred to the Hurt Locker, and I think, you know, that idea of that kind of Iraq, Afghanistan, early noughties, messy, bullets popping around your head, you know. War is hell, war is messy, war isn't perfect, war isn't sexy, you know, it's a messy kick bollock scramble affair, and I think that first opening sequence really tells that story. I'm very proud of it, actually.
And you mentioned Jamie Foxx as Little John earlier on.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing with the film, I think there's lots of, in a good way, lots of different tones and textures coming in. And one of the things I really liked was that your guys' relationship, it feels a bit like a sort of 80s buddy relationship.
That's totally
especially
it.
Your the training montage.
Totally that.
Felt like a sort of modern version of something you would see in an 80s movie.
Completely, completely. And I think that was always the idea. And I always felt that, you know, when it was pitched to me, part of it was that, you know, hopefully Jamie would play John, and I just thought I felt like we were quite a good fit together. You know, obviously I'm a far smaller deal than Jamie Foxx, Oscar winning Jamie Foxx, but I felt that we might work well together in a kind of buddy dynamic and an odd couple dynamic, and we had a really good time bringing that relationship to life. You know, he has this incredible grounding in comedy and is sort of effortlessly very charismatic and cool. And the thing about Jamie is he's so modern, you know, he's so contemporary, he's so current, he's so cool. And I just think that's what this world that Otto was building needed, was a linchpin figure like him, which very firmly established us as not being in a world that you can recognize.
We were talking before about the fact that Robin Hood has been told so many times. Yeah. Who was your Robin Hood growing up?
There was the Disney Fox, definitely.
Fox, yeah.
Robin Hood and Little John running through the forest. Oddle-lally, oddle-lally, golly, what a day.
Did you offer to sing in the new one? You're like, I can sing.
I try and sing in everything I do. Any chance I get, I am insufferable. And then I guess the Kevin Costner one.
Yeah.
I would have been, I mean, how old are you, Ben?
I am 27.
So we would have been quite little then.
Yeah, like
really
it was the year I was born, because the number one when I was born was Everything I Do, I Do, which was like basically the whole of 1991.
Yeah.
was
1991 the year it came out?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I remember seeing it when I was about 7 or 8. I think it came out in 93, but obviously I'm wrong. Yes, but I remember watching that with my father when I was quite young, certainly younger than 10, because I always remember that, the old hag who was kind of in Alan Rickman's ear, being really
like
frightening,
creepy.
Really
real
frightening.
Creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if you can tell, and you maybe can't because that's part of the whole situation, but I'm from Nottingham. I grew up in Nottingham.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. So how upset were you that we shot it in Dubrovnik?
Not massively upset, because like you look at the Ridley Scott one, and Russell Crowe did an accent.
Yes, it's not...
An accent was done.
Yeah, he did.
And he tried.
Didn't he famously walk off a radio show?
He did, because there was some kind of real consternation about... There were real notes of, like, Irish in there. He was pulling in a lot of things. And I kind of don't blame him, because Nottingham and the Midlands, it's a really hard accent to pin down. Like,
yes.
There is a bit of one, but you can't really, like,
it's got
put a
something
note
of the north
is.
In it, isn't it? But it's not, it's not that. I wouldn't brave it myself, not without some study time. But yes, bless him. I think that, like, he's obviously a giant of an actor, and at times in his career has obviously given some of the most incredible performances. But yeah. I don't, that Robin Hood, you know, whilst there were some really great things about it, I don't think it if you pardon the pun, I don't think it quite found its mark, did it? You know, although it did very well at the box office. I think it made like 350 million or something. But yeah, it's. I don't think it was. You know, I don't. Far be it from me to criticise, but it. Yeah, I didn't. I think I felt that, you know, we could do something a bit different to that, and something that was a little bit more felt a bit more modern and a bit more for a younger audience perhaps as well.
So we were mentioning with your hair before, you've been
all
shooting,
my lack
or
thereof.
Lack thereof, yeah. It's very, very short at the moment. You've been shooting Rocket Man. Are you still shooting? Are there a few
I'm
bits left to do? You're totally done?
I'm done, yeah. Chris came out a little while ago actually, which is lovely. Yes, I'm done. I picture wrapped on Wednesday, and then I did quite a few days actually of poster shoots and things. There's a limit to what I can say about it. It's a musical. It's quite grown up in nature, but also quite also very warm and very celebratory, whilst kind of delving into some of the. It's more set. It's more about what wasn't seen at the time than what was, you know. I know that Bo Rap has this. I haven't seen it, but it has this sensational Wembley concert at the at the end, is what I'm told. And I think the time we commit to seeing Elton on stage is quite limited. I can immediately think of two stage performances, but other than that, three actually. But other than that, they are. It's about his life backstage and what and some of the trials and tribulations and turmoils he went through. So it's a kind of grown-up musical.
Yeah, well, I mean, what was it like for you shooting a full-on musical, basically, even though it's sort of music biopic?
It's been, without doubt, the single greatest filmmaking experience of my life.
Really? Wow.
Without doubt, yeah. Without doubt. I've loved every second of it. I've made so many friends. We've had a great time. Dexter Fletcher, who is my great friend and our second, we've made two films together now. I think this is his moment, actually. And I have really high hopes for the film. Really high hopes.
I mean, one of the things, because the first trailer is out there already, like a teaser trailer.
Yes.
I really love that moment where it's one of the performances, actually, where you're on stage playing
that's one of the three I'm
Rocket
thinking
Man.
Of, yeah.
And as you play Rocket Man, the crowd kind of starts to float into the air in zero gravity. And that's such like a beautiful visual moment.
Yeah.
Are there all kind of things like that peppered through the film? That just really intrigued me in a way that... It's different to what you expect.
So it's what you shouldn't expect is a biopic. And if you liked that moment, then I will say that I don't think you'll be disappointed when you watch it.
Very good. And you mentioned before, we've spoken to Matthew Vaughan about the project.
He's
producing it. It's his studio. he mentioned as well that it's kind of R-rated, it's sex, drugs, rock and roll.
Yeah, it is.
Is it kind of really leaning into that?
Yeah, it is leaning into that. I don't think we've been gratuitous, but we certainly haven't shied away from it. You know, I shot my first sex scene in it, and it's I personally have really tried to throw myself into finding the spirit of who Elton is, and that means exploring in a very hands-on way his sexuality, his relationship with substances, his notoriously tempestuous nature, and trying to humanize that and make that something that people can understand. The movie we've shot is I think quite brave, and our wonderful studio Paramount have been incredibly supportive of that as the endeavor, and I'm very excited to see how it unfolds and how it molds into a film, because I think it could be, I really hope it could be something quite special. There's a huge weight of responsibility when it comes to telling the story of Elton John, and I think the storytelling style and techniques that Dexter has employed and our cinematographer George Richmond, I just think it's quite unusual to certainly at studio movie level, because it's quite unconventional, and I think it could be good. I really do. I really hope it's good, because the experience of making it has been so positive and so invigorating and exciting. I'm trying to figure out if I've said anything I shouldn't. fuck it. I think there's a good movie in there.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing
good,
it.
Good,
thanks. So, speaking of Matthew, I wanted to pick up on something that's sort of relatively fresh news, that you're not going to be in Kingsman 3, or I just wanted to kind of break down what that is, because again, when we've spoken to Matthew, he told us quite a bit about the upcoming projects and the plans for that series, that as well as the sort of Eggsy Harry Hart film, there's the plan for the Kingsman The Great Game, which is the sort of 1900s, early 20th century
that's
Kingsman
the one
film.
I'm referring to when I say I'm not going to be in it.
So is that kind of coming first? There was talks of that shooting back to back, or
I'm not done with my Savile Row suit. It's just there's other things happening within that universe that are there's a story that's going to be told before the next and potentially final iteration in the Harry and Eggsy saga.
Yeah, because I guess when you do stuff that's set beforehand, then that can affect
it's set 100 years ago, so you know, I would be a twinkle in my great great grandfather's eye. But you know, it's Matthew Vaughan. He keeps his cards close to his chest, and he always delights and surprises. And from what I've heard about Kingsman: The Great Game, I think it's going to be fucking brilliant.
And so when the time comes for you to do that last of the Eggsy and Harry Hart films, how are you going to feel about wrapping up as Eggsy, that role that kind of basically launched
made
your
my name
career?
Yeah. I think I will feel like I think Eggsy, I've loved it, but it feels like my 20s, you know. And I think going into my 30s, I think I will start to, even if I don't look it, I will start to feel old to play this sort of street urchin. So I mean, my dream for it would be that I could do one more and that people responded well to it, and that it was a success in the way that the first two have been. I would like the third one to be better received than the second one was. I felt we got a bit of an unfair kicking, if I'm totally honest.
Was that difficult for you when
I think in some respects it was, because I just gave everything to it, and and then it was so quickly torn down that I think I did feel a bit of a sting. I think in some respects it probably wasn't quite as well put together a film as the first one, but it certainly wasn't a bad film. And when we got this real kick in, and I think what I would like to happen is for us to do a third one and for it to feel like a worthy third installment to what has been a great part of my life. And then my dream for it would be that I would kind of hang up my suit for, 10-15 years, and then come back and pass the mantle on. That's what I'd like to do.
Be the Harry to a new Eggsy.
That's what I'd like to do. Yeah, I think that would be fun. But that we'd have to take a step away from it for a while before we did that. But that for me, that would be the perfect kind of way to wrap up what has been a huge, huge part of my life, and something that I will always be incredibly grateful to Matthew for, and will always be in his debt for. So you never know. Watch this space. Either way, Kingsman's going to survive with or without me.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Taron Egerton. It's been lovely to have you back
thanks,
on the pod.
Ben. Great speaking with you.
Thanks very much.
Okay, time now to talk about this week's releases. Let's start with The Christmas Chronicles, actually, which is on Netflix. And this is the big selling point, Helen. Kurt Russell as Santa.
Yeah.
Do we need to know anything else?
No, you don't. It's wonderful. It's sort of, it felt to me a little bit like, and I mean this as a compliment, Santa Claus the movie. Right? It feels like it offers a new generation an explanation for how Santa Claus does what he does. My dad tells a story about me watching Santa Claus the movie as a sort of 7-year-old when I was beginning to waver, and that basically solidifying my belief for like another 3 years. And I feel like this is going to do the same thing for a generation of kids. It's going to explain to them how Santa works. For a slightly older generation, it's going to make us very confused as to how we're supposed to feel about Santa, because Kurt Russell, his beard is really so magnificent with the hair and the beard and the anyway,
you did say that you were sexy confused, that you tweeted about how you were sexy confused by Santa Claus.
I mean there's a bit with an open shirt and a medallion. I mean, I don't know,
a man who we should say swaggers around town with a bulging sack.
Well, that's I mean, I hadn't really put that together, but okay, I guess. Anyway, so Kurt Russell is wonderful Santa Claus. And he basically, the story of the film is that these two very sweet children basically accidentally cause a crash of his sled in Chicago. And he has to reassemble the bits. He has to find the reindeer again. He has to find his sack. Stop it, Chris. He has to find and repair the sleigh. They have to help him. There's a bit where he ends up in prison. It's kind of wonderful. There is a musical number that is one for the ages. It's wonderful.
He goes full Elvis, pretty much.
He does go full Elvis. Yeah. And I very, very much enjoyed this. I had a really good time. So yeah, it's not, I mean, it's not...
It's flawed.
It's not great art, no. Is it? But it is a really solid, feel-good Christmas movie.
The Santa Claus the movie analogy is a perfect one, because I thought of that as well. Because it's a brother and sister in this, but the central relationship in this reminded me of the central relationship between the young girl and
the rich girl and the poor boy in
the poor
one.
Boy yeah. in Santa Claus the movie. David Huddleston may still be my premier movie Santa Claus, but Kurt Russell is up there, largely because he's basically playing Kurt Russell.
Yeah, he is 100% playing Kurt Russell, who I now believe might live at the North Pole and make toys for children. I'm not sure.
I don't doubt it. I really don't doubt it. He is a lot of fun. Go see this. But I think kids in particular are going to love this.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
a little, they're the sort of little gremlin-esque. You tell Chris Columbus's hand is all over this a little bit. And there are gremlin-esque elves that pop up towards the end. They're quite naughty and mischievous and a lot of fun. Bad yeah. CG, but you get yeah. past that. And they're quite fun. And Kurt's great. So yeah. yeah.
And this is on Netflix, we should say. It's not a
this
cinema.
This is movie. On Netflix. You can see it on Netflix as of today. And if you want to hear Kurt Russell talking about that and some of his other great roles, from Snake Plissken to R.J. MacCready, and then you can listen to our new interview special with Kurt Russell, which will be up this weekend sometime. I'm guessing it'll be up tomorrow, Saturday, by the time you hear this. So check out that. Next up, we have The Girl in the Spider's Web, which is a strange beast, really. It is a reboot of the Dragon Tattoo movies, but skips the official sequel novels by Stieg Larsson and goes straight to the one that came out a few years ago, written by someone whose name I can't remember. I apologise. And it doesn't have David Fincher, it doesn't have Daniel Craig, it doesn't have Rooney Mara. Instead, it has Ben Travis.
It has Claire Foy as Lisbeth Salander. A quite different take on the character. She's slightly softer and slightly warmer, but that's only in relation to Noomi Rapace's and Rooney Mara's exceptionally icy, cold take on the character. So this time, she is still a hacker. She is hired to kind of take care of an extremely dangerous computer program, but she's attacked and the software is stolen, and she has to track it down, get it back, and it ends up having some ties to her past. This is directed by Fede Alvarez, who did the Evil Dead remake and Don't Breathe, which is great if you've not seen that. He brings a really good eye to this. I think he's got some really lovely sort of imagery in there. He's a really solid director. This film is quite a bit more toned down compared to the previous Dragon Tattoo films, but it's a slightly more James Bondy take on the series, on the character. I have to say, personally, I didn't massively mind that. It is a very different kind of take. It's quite a fast-paced, propulsive thriller, and it's a little bit ludicrous. There will be moments all the way through where you're going, oh, this is a bit cliched, or this doesn't really work, but I think it moves pretty quickly. And if you just go in expecting a decent enough thriller with an interesting lead character, a good take on the character from Claire Foy, if not probably the definitive take,
I think
you'll
really
find stuff
though.
To enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, she sets the queen to rest within about 10 seconds of being on screen. You're just like do you know what I mean? They don't even look alike.
She's done that, I think, in everything she's done since The Crown.
She does, yeah.
Whether it's...
But she's really impressive in this. So, and yeah, I mean, it does feel very much Nordy and just another Scandi noir, but a good one. So, hey.
Yeah. 3 stars. Yeah. We gave 3 stars to The Girl in the Spider's Web, but it didn't do well at the box office when it opened last week in the States. So I suspect that might be it as far as Lisbeth Salander is concerned for the time being. And Mikael Blomkvist, who's like very small brackets, very small font for the brackets around his name in this one. Jimbo, we're going to talk about Robin Hood very, very quickly because we're running
briefly.
Out of time. People are banging on the window.
All the time it deserves. This is, in fact, the latest adaptation of the tale of the Sherwood Outlaw. This is by Otto Bathurst, who's most famous for, I guess, Black Mirror and directing Peaky Blinders. It stars Taron Egerton as Robin of Locksley, fresh back from the Crusades to discover that the Sheriff of Nottingham, played by an incredibly one-note evil Ben Mendelsohn, is in league with the Catholic Church and threatening to... I mean, who honestly cares? So, the problem with this... is it's trying very, very hard to be super contemporary and super cool and super relevant. So it goes for that kind of very arch, anachronistic historical look that Brian Helgeland did in A Knight's Tale, except without any of the wit or flair or humour. And it just comes across as entirely tedious and pointless. I really thought this film would be terrible. I was inclined to give it a chance because Ben saw it and said it was good. And then I saw it with you, Chris, and let's say... it lived up to its initial hype. It was not good. Anyone who's even familiar with the story will be, I think the more familiar you are and the more affection you have for Robin Hood, the less you will enjoy this film, because it strays so far from the kind of accepted canon of this story.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great Robin Hood film. It is a weird take on the character and on the mythology, but I went in, like you, having seen the trailer and thinking, this does not look good at all. This looks just really bad.
Yeah.
And about half an hour in, I was thinking, I'm quite enjoying this. I found it really...
What's
wrong with you? Right, I think Taron Egerton is kind of charming and fun in the lead role. Uh-huh. I actually really like Ben Mendelsohn's villain. I thought I was expecting run-of-the-mill villain stuff, but I think he really pushes it.
He has some
really great lines in this that he, like...
Does he know?
Have you seen the Kevin Costner Robin Hood?
I have.
He never calls off Christmas.
No, I found this actually... It wastes absolutely no time, and it's got an energy to it that I honestly had no time to stop and think if this take on Robin Hood was really terrible or not.
It's unfolding in front of your eyes. Yes. The terribleness was happening in front of your eyes.
I can't explain it.
It was there all along, Ben.
The terribleness was inside you all along.
I just...
Were you having a Hill House moment, like an entirely different film was kind of unfolding?
Honestly, I went expecting the absolute worst.
And you were given it.
And... I thought it was all right, to be honest. I can count at least five films that I have enjoyed much, much less than that this year.
In your life, yes.
No, this year. I think it's perfectly fine, has some nice visual moments in. I like some of the performances in it. I'm not rushing back for the sequel. It very kind of clearly is
never going to happen.
But I think this is one of those things that everyone's shitting on it now.
Yes.
But maybe in a couple of years, there will be a few extra dissenting voices.
Maybe flowers will grow from that manure.
Absolutely not. Honestly, this is not even on the level of Legend of the Fucking Sword. It's an abomination.
The movie itself is awful. It's misconceived on almost every single level. Every single level.
But yeah. Apart from that, but Mrs. apart from Lincoln,
great, you go and say
how
it.
Is the theater? Yeah.
It is Guy Ritchie presents Bat Assassin's Creed. And it's as terrible and weirdly enjoyable as that sounds.
So we gave this film 2 stars, which it was actually generous. I might give it a lone star rating. Don't watch it. Even if your life depends on it.
Yeah, it's a bad film, Ben. We need to have a chat.
Everyone, feel free to at me. Feel free to at me.
So that's it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun, where we'll be joined by possibly two of our favourite directors.
Ooh.
So there's Alfonso Cuarón, director of Roma, which will be getting a cinematic release ahead of its release on Netflix next week. That's the cinematic release next week. Netflix comes in December. Mm-hmm. And possibly Taika Waititi, who is in town this weekend to give a screenwriting lecture at BAFTA. And we might be speaking to him, not set in stone yet, but we might be speaking to him. So if we are, that'll be on next week's podcast. If we don't, then you get Alfonso Cuarón.
I mean, that's
not
still
bad.
Pretty good.
That's not too bad. That's not too shabby.
Yeah.
Okay. And we've also got a whole bunch of specials coming up as well. We have the Kurt Russell interview special coming up. We have our Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald spoiler special. That'll be up on Tuesday. And that's going to be with the Davids, Yates and Heyman, giving Ben lots of spoiler answers. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We haven't recorded that yet, which is why it's not up until Tuesday. We've got all sorts of stuff. Keep in peel for spoiler specials on the likes of, hopefully, Creed 2 and Aquaman and maybe even Bumblebee over the next few weeks. So it's going to be a pretty busy time in the run-up to Christmas. But we should, before we go, talk about the thing I mentioned at the very beginning of the show, which is this new song by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
And John Kandor.
And John Kandor. That I can't quite get my head around. Because I'm not sure if it's meant to be for Hamilton or not. So do you want to fill people in on what it is very briefly?
So he's been doing basically monthly Hamel drops, which are either remixes, new performances, new takes on the music from Hamilton. And this is him sitting down with the sort of legendary Broadway composer John Kandor and working together on a song. And you're right, it's a sort of it's in a weird gray area. Is it about Lin-Manuel Miranda himself, or is it about Hamilton, or is it about a little bit of both?
It's called Cheering For Me Now.
Yeah. And will they cheer forever? Who knows?
And I tell you what, it's an interesting song, because I don't know whether this is, you know, these new songs and the Hamel drops or whatnot are going to be incorporated into the show at some point.
No.
You don't think?
No.
I think
the show is done.
Adjacent to the Hamilton mixtape, which they said they were going to do a second one of, and then I think everything kind of got a bit much, and they did these kind of monthly drops as a kind of alternative to doing a full second mixtape.
Yeah, I think they're still maybe sort of collated like that on another mixtape or something.
Because the video is him in his Hamilton costume, and I know he's going to play Hamilton again in Puerto Rico.
Yeah,
and potentially at some point London as well. He's mentioned that as a thing he would like to do. So I don't know. It was interesting, but also, if you guys check out the video, I don't know if you've had a chance to see it yet. Or his voice sounds richer and deeper than it did on the Hamilton original soundtrack, almost as if he's worked on it a little bit.
It may be, number one, he may not be doing it 8 times a week, which is probably, you know, his voice probably rested slightly. Number two, he may have done a lot of work. I know he worked very hard in his dancing, for example, but he may have done voice work as well for Mary Poppins, which might also help. I mean, think about how Madonna's voice changed after doing Evita. You know, so I think that there might be a bit of both of those. But I think probably the exhaustion factor of having been on Broadway is probably a bigger factor, I would imagine. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you know, dude can sing.
Dude can sing and write and do all of that good funky stuff.
Sure.
The man is non-stop.
On that bombshell, it is time to say goodbye to our three colleagues of such lethal cunning. There's a man who has disconnected from this podcast for a good 10 or 15 minutes. He's just been basically just a body in the box, just making up numbers. James Dyer.
I was so overwhelmed by having Beric here that, frankly, I'm just exhausted. The excitement has just got to me.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. Anyway, goodbye.
Bye.
It's goodbye from Ben Travis.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Tiddly.
And it's goodbye from me. I am off to prepare, revise, study hard for next week's HQ Marvel Universe special. Because what I really need in my life is an excuse to watch some Marvel movies. Thanks so much for listening. See you next week. Bye.